It's a pleasure to welcome back Leora Ornstein. The last time she spoke, she was Leora Moskowitz. So I want to give her a mazel tov on her recent wedding. I think on Hanukkah. Wedding was just on Hanukkah. So yes. It's a pleasure to welcome you back in their newfound, you know, status. You'd have many, many happy years with each other. Leora is a student at GPATS and Stern, the graduate program in advanced Talmud study. She's an undergraduate. She graduated from Stern, is working on a master's degree in biblical and Talmudic interpretation. When you're young enough, I can say you were a fresh high school, spent the year at Torah Vavoda in Israel, and it's a pleasure to welcome you back to Torah Motion. Bakasha.
Thank you, Rabbi Kalman. Erev Tov, everybody. A pleasure to learn with everybody tonight. Okay, so Parshat Truma at first glance might seem to be a little bit on the more boring side of Parshat, because we just had all this excitement, right? We just had the 10 plagues, we had Yetzias Mitzrayim, up to the pinnacle of Matan Torah, and then we come to four Parshiot, which with one in the middle, with Kitisa in the middle, that has Chet HaEgel, of Psukim and Psukim describing exactly how all of the Kalim in the Beit Ham, in the Mishkan are supposed to be built, their exact measurements, their exact spots, all of their functions. It gets a little bit to feel like a list, a little bit to feel like an architecture blueprint, which could be interesting, but four Parshiot? What do we do that for four Parshiot? So what we're going to do tonight in Parshat Truma is we're going to take a deep dive into one of the Kalim, into the Kli of the Aron Kodesh. Now, the reason I chose the Aron Kodesh is because the Aron is a fascinating Kli. The Aron, both in the Psukim and in the Midrashim, have very interesting highlights and unique things about it. I'll tell you a few of them just to spark the interest, and then we'll go and see if we could take these little spatterings of details about the Aron and paint a picture about what the function of the Aron Kodesh is, what we're meant to gain from all of these Psukim describing the Mishkan, and specifically the Aron Kodesh. Firstly, when listing all of the Kalim in the Mishkan, the Aron Kodesh comes first in the list. So that shows some significance. Number two is when going on in Psukim about each of the Kalim, the Torah takes the most amount of time to describe to us the Aron Kodesh. It takes more Psukim than any of the other Kalim, also highlighting its significance. Now, something else unique about the Aron Kodesh is that it doesn't really seem to have a function. Right, all of the other Kalim, let's say we have the Mizbeach. So what do you do with the Mizbeach? You offer sacrifices. You give korbanot on the Mizbeach. What do they do with the menorah? Every day they would light the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. The Shulchan, they would bake bread and put it on the Shulchan and switch it every week. But the Aron, all they did was put the Luchot in it and maybe some other things. But put the Luchot in the Aron and left it there to sit. So what's the function of the Aron Kodesh if it's just there to sit? Why does it have a functional use like all the other Kalim? So that's just in the Psukim. Now, if we look a little bit in the Midrashim, there are fascinating Midrashim and Gemaras about the Aron Kodesh. The Gemara tells us, Makom Aron, Eino Min Hamida. The place of the Aron Kodesh, it didn't really fit in space. It says the Mishkan was a certain size, the Kodesh HaKadoshim was a certain size, and the Aron Kodesh didn't really fit in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But in some mystical way, it was able to fit. Very strange Midrash. Another Midrash tells us, the Gemara says that the Aron Kodesh was Nosei et Nosav. It would carry those who carried it. It says that the Kohanim carried the Aron Kodesh across the Yarden, and because they carried the Aron Kodesh, they were lifted in the air and they floated. Because when they carried the Aron carried them. And one last strange feature of the Aron Kodesh is the Gemara tells us that not only were the Luchot in the Aron Kodesh, like we might expect, but also in the Aron Kodesh were a piece of the Man, were the broken Luchot, after Chet HaEgel and Moshe broke the Luchot, Aaron's staff, a little bit of the Shemen HaMishcha, and a few other spattering of things, seemingly all collected in the Aron Kodesh. Why are all these things in the Aron? Why does the Gemara tell us all these interesting features about what might be in the Aron Kodesh? So we'll get the source of that. Let's. Oh, sorry about that. Share screen. Let's see. Okay, there we go. Sorry, bro. Okay. Everyone can see the sources? We're good? Okay. So let's jump right in. In the first source, we have the pasuk that introduces the commandment to build the Mishkan. And the pasuk says, Va'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham. Build for me a sanctuary, and I will dwell in it. Now, this pasuk is near and dear to my heart, because usually when people choose, let's say, right, go back to my high school yearbook, right? Like Helmut said, I graduated from the first school not so many years ago, but a few years ago, and we got to choose a Hebrew and an English quote for our high school yearbook. And when you think about what quote might someone choose for their high school yearbook, a Hebrew quote, people often turn to Pirkei Avot and things like that. They say, Ezehu Ashir Hasameach Bechelko, who is happy, one who is happy with what he has. Knei Lecha Chaver, you should get for yourself a good friend. Some nice, uplifting Pirkei Avot sayings. Now, what did I choose when I was in 12th grade? I had learned Parsha with my friend, and this pasuk in Parsha Truma just stood out to me so much. I felt like it was so meaningful. I chose it as my high school yearbook. So everyone has here, Pirkei Avot Gemara here, and I just have a pasuk from Parsha Truma. Leo Ramaskowitz, Ba'asu li mikdash, v'shachanti b'tocham. You should make for me a sanctuary, and I will dwell in it. Yeah. Now, what did I find so compelling about this pasuk? Why was I so attracted to this pasuk of Va'asu li mikdash, v'shachanti b'tocham? Because the pasuk is saying, build for me a sanctuary, build for me a mikdash, and I will dwell among you. Right? The pasuk says, v'asu li mikdash, and not v'shachanti b'tocha. Not that Hashem is going to dwell in the mikdash, but Hashem is going to dwell b'tocham, among them. What's plural? Plural is B'nai Yisrael. Hashem is going to dwell among B'nai Yisrael when we build a mikdash. And I felt that it was so meaningful that it's not that Hashem's presence is only in the mikdash. Hashem's presence is not only in the shul, in the midrash, in a specific location, but Hashem dwells within each of us. So that's just an overview. That's the introductory command to build the Mishkan. Ba'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham. Now, let's take a step back and look at what is the purpose of the Mishkan. What do we think the broader goal they were trying to accomplish is by building a Mishkan? Now, this is subject to a big debate between Rashi and the Ramban. Let's take a look at both of their approaches. If you look in source number 2, Rashi's going to tell us, he uses his principle that he often uses when relevant in the Torah. He says, "Ein muktam u'mu'uchar b'Torah." The Torah doesn't necessarily go in chronological order, Rashi tells us. And therefore, he takes the liberty to say, "Ma'aseh ha'egel kodem l'tzivui melechet ha'mishkan yamim rabim ha'el." Rashi says that the commandment to build the Mishkan came after Chet ha'egel. Why? Right? Where does it come really in the chronological order of the Torah? We just had Matan Torah in last week's Parsha, the Parsha before that, in Yitro and Mishpatim. Now we have building the Mishkan. And in 2 more Parshia, we'll have Parsha Kitisa, where we'll learn about Chet ha'egel. Rashi says this commandment of the Mishkan is out of place. Really, it's supposed to be in a few Parshiot after Chet ha'egel, because the building of the Mishkan is meant to be a repair for Chet ha'egel. It's meant to be an atonement for the sin of the golden calf. Why exactly? We'll get into that a little bit soon. So Rashi says that the purpose of the Mishkan is to atone for Chet ha'egel. It's not supposed to be here. It's really supposed to be later for that function. The Ramban says something very different. The Ramban, he doesn't like this idea of utilizing this Ein Mukta Mumuchar B'Torah. Ramban says, let's stick to the pshat. We just had Matan Torah, and where are we now? Now we're in the Mishkan, right? Matan Torah and the Mishkan. What's the connection between the two of them? And the Ramban wants to say that the purpose of the Mishkan is to be a continuation for us of Har Sinai, of Ma'amad Har Sinai, of that glorious time we had so close in Hashem's presence, Matan Torah, receiving the Torah. He says, we don't want to come off that high and just let it drop. We want to come off that high and find a way to channel it going forward. there's a beautiful mashal, actually, that I think is similar to this. There's a mashal of a man who's walking in a dark forest, and it's pouring rain, right? Exactly as mashals go. A man walking in a dark forest, it's night, it's pouring rain, it's thunder and lightning, and he's trying to find his way home. And the man is totally lost, and all of a sudden, he sees a bolt of lightning. And there are two things the man could do right now. Either he could see that bolt of lightning, and he can get so excited. He could say, wow, there's light for a moment. That's so great. And then what happens? A moment later, it's pitch black again, and he's stuck in the forest, and he has no way to go. What would a wise man do in this case? A wise man would see that flash of lightning and say, let me grab this light, this moment of light, and let me look ahead to see the path ahead of me, so that even when it's dark again, I'll know which way to go. What's the Ramban saying? He's saying that Har Sinai was that lightning experience, literally lightning, right? Roem and Hakolos. We had thunder. We had lightning. We had that high inspiration. And he says, we don't want to lose it. We don't want to be that man who sees the light, but then gets excited and just goes back into the dark forest. Ramban says, we want to find a way to channel that great energy, to channel that lightning, so that even when we're in our normal everyday lives, we could still have that path. We could see the path ahead to go. We can channel that inspiration into an everyday routine. And he says, that is what the Mishkan is meant to be. The Mishkan is meant to be an everyday experience of Har Sinai, of Ma'amad Har Sinai and Matan Torah. Let's see it in the language of the Ramban. In source number 3, the Ramban says, V'sod HaMishkan Hu, right in the beginning, the secret of the Mishkan is, Sheyihyeh HaKavod Asher Shachin Al Har Sinai Shochin Alav B'Nistar. That the Shekhinah that Hashem dwelled upon us at Har Sinai should continue into our everyday lives, but not in that same nigla way, not in that outward way, but in a nistar way, in a more subtle way. Mishkan is meant to be a continuation of that inspiration, of that closeness to Hashem from Har Sinai, now in our everyday lives. And the Ramban says that he learns this from lots of parallels. He sees that it says, Kavod Hashem by Har Sinai twice. And he sees that it says the same thing by the Mishkan. So we see that linguistic parallel between Har Sinai and the Mishkan to kind of tie them together, to say that the purpose of the Mishkan is to be a continuation of that Har Sinai experience. And let's look just in the last line of the Ramban. He echoes this again, the same idea. He says, B'haya b'mishkan tamidim Yisrael, Hashem was always with B'nai Yisrael in the Mishkan, HaKavod HaNir Lehem B'Har Sinai. The kavod of Hashem, the glory of Hashem that we experience in Har Sinai, that's going to be continued with B'nai Yisrael into the Mishkan. So what do we see here? We have a debate between Rashi and the Ramban. Well, Rashi says the purpose of the Mishkan is to atone for Chet HaEgel. The Ramban is saying that the purpose of the Mishkan is to be a continuation for us of the experience of Har Sinai. And there are lots of things that might underlie this debate. Those aren't as directly related to our topic here. So let's take that debate. We have Rashi, Kapara for Chet HaEgel, and we have Ramban, a continuation of Har Sinai. Those are the two options of what is the function of the Mishkan for us. So with that background about the broader Mishkan, we're going to now look at the Aron Kodesh, and we're going to see how the Aron, how this Kli, contributes towards the function of the broader goal of the Mishkan. So let's go look at source number 4. When you initially look at source number 4, a few things could jump out at us about the Aron, right? Let's look at just the first line, right? The first line is, V'asu Aron Atzei Shitim. What stands out to us in the beginning is the Aron Kodesh is first in line. Out of all of the Kelim in the Beit HaMikdash, it's the first one, you know? Like, if something is the most important, often we'll put it at the beginning of our list. Not any, right, offense to my younger siblings, but I'm to be the eldest child, right? The eldest child, you like to think, most important in the list? Maybe. But it does say in the Aseret HaDibros, right, Kabeda Avicha Vat Imecha, and maybe the extra Vav is covered for older siblings. But anyways, we see that the Aron is listed first in the list. And there's a Medrash that actually addresses this. Why is the Aron first in the list of all the Kelim? And we see that here in source number 5. Source number 5 talks about the creation of the world and ties it to the creation of the Mishkan. It says, let's start in the middle here. Let's start at the words ma ha'or on the second line. The Midrash tells us, Maha'or kadam l'kol ma'asa bereishit, just like light came before, at the beginning of all of creation, dechtiv vayomer Elokim yihi or, like the pasuk says, Hashem said, there should be light, right? That's day number one, the beginning of creation, there should be light. Light was created first in creation. He says, af b'mishkan b'torah shenikrei or. So too in the Mishkan, the first thing that's going to be created is Torah, because Torah is called or. Where do we see that Torah is called or? And Pasuk tells us, dechtiv in Mishlei, ki ner mitzvah b'torah or. A ner is compared to a mitzvah, and the Torah is going to be compared to or. We're going to come back to this pasuk again later, in another section this year. But for now, what we're just trying to say is that Torah is compared to light. And therefore, kadmu ma'aseha l'kol ha'kelim. And therefore, the Aron Kodesh comes before all of the other kelim. Now, what's behind this medrash? What's this medrash trying to tell us? It's saying, just like light was created first, so too Torah is created first. What do they have to do with each other? Maybe what this medrash is trying to tell us is when Hashem created the world, he started with light. And therefore now, when we try to create a world for Hashem to dwell in, we're going to start with whatever we can create as light. And what's a tangible thing that we have that expresses light is the Torah, right? Just like Hashem created a world for us to dwell in and started that world with light, so too when we create a world for Hashem to dwell in, we're going to start with light. And Torah is called Or, and therefore Torah is going to be what we start to build the Mishkan with. So that's just at first glance what we see, right? When we look at source number four, we see that Torah is first in the list. Most important, something so foundational to it that the Torah compares it to the creation of the world and the creation of light in the beginning of all of the worlds. Now, what's another thing that stands out to us in source number four? Something that I like to do, my grandparents are here on the Zoom. Something I like to do at my grandparents' house when I was younger is, I remember Shabbos morning, we would come and we would sit at the kitchen table. We'd get our babka and we'd have the magazine open. And my grandmother always had the magazine open to one of those spot the differences. You know, you got to circle all the little nuanced differences in it. So let's see number four. It's a pretty obvious. What's the spot the difference in number four? All of the kelim start with va'asita, va'asita, va'asita. All in singular. Create this. Create this. A command to the single person. A command to Moshe to build each of the kelim. And what does it say by the Aaron? Not in singular va'asita, but rather va'asu. In plural, you all should make the Aron. So we're going to come back to later why specifically it's in plural, why specifically this va'asu. But what stands out is where else in Parshat Truma do we have this same usage of the word va'asu in plural? Is, right, if we go back up to source number one, va'asu li mikdash v'shachanti v'tocham. The one other place where it says va'asu is by the Mishkan as a whole. The Mishkan as a whole, it says Va'asu, and now the Aron we say Va'asu. Almost to express to us that the Aron is a microcosm of the entire Mishkan, that the purpose of the Mishkan is fulfilled through specifically the Aron. And there's another place we see this, another linguistic parallel, where we see the Aron Kodesh being parallel to the entirety of the Mishkan. It says, in sources 6 and 7, right, we see that both the Mishkan and the Aron have this tie to the word Edut. In source number 6, it says, El Pukutei HaMishkan, Mishkan HaEdut. The Mishkan is called the Mishkan HaEdut, the tent of a witness to Hashem. And in source number 7, we see the Aron is also called by this language of Edut. Right? It says, V'nodati lecha sham, Hashem will appear to B'nai Yisrael there, V'dibarti yitzcha me'al ha-kapora, mi'bein shnei ha-kruvim. Hashem will come and speak to B'nai Yisrael through the kruvim on the Aron Kodesh. Asher al Aron ha'edut. Again, this lashon of edut on this Aron of testimony, of witness. And asher atzava'otcha el B'nai Yisrael, what Hashem will command to B'nai Yisrael. So again, we see this parallel language between Mishkan ha'edut and Aron ha'edut. We see the va'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham and va'asu et ha'aron. We see this parallel between the Mishkan as a whole and the Aron in specific, almost to show us that the Aron is the key to all of the Mishkan. The foundation to the Mishkan is the Aron Kodesh. And one more just physical detail, which highlights this, is where was the Aron Kodesh placed in the Mishkan? Right? You know, the Mishkan, we could see it like the blueprints. We have a big, we have the Kodesh, we have the Heichal, we have the Chatzer, and we go all the way to the most inner part, the most center part of the Mishkan. Where was it? It's the Kodesh HaKadashim. And where does the Aron Kodesh lie? It lies right there in the Kodesh HaKadashim. If you look in source number 8, the Torah just tells us this. It says, the Natatza et HaParucha et Tachar HaKrasim is telling us how we should put the Aron together and where we should place it. The Havita Shama, we should bring it to there. Where should we bring it? We beam the Parucha at Aron HaEdut. Again, it's Aron HaEdut. Nivdila Parucha Lechem, bein HaKodesh ubein HaKodesh HaKadashim. Right? And the Parucha, the thing that goes over, like a blanket over the Aron, is going to separate between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadashim, because the Aron Kodesh is placed in the most center part of the Mishkan. It's placed right in there in the Kodesh HaKadashim. So all of these things, the linguistic parallels between the Mishkan as a whole and the Aron in specific, the Aron coming first in the list of all of the Kalim, the Aron being placed in the most centermost part of the Mishkan, all highlight for us the centrality of the Aron Kodesh in the Mishkan. And what is that to tell us? If we go back to our debate between Rashi and the Ramban, which do all of these support? What does this evidence give us towards the purpose of the Mishkan? Perhaps it leans us towards the Ramban. The Ramban in saying that the purpose of the Mishkan is to be a continuation of Matan Torah, is to continue that Ma'amad Har Sinai experience with us through our everyday lives. And what are these psukim highlighting? What's the Medrash highlighting? That the way to do that is through the Aron, is through the Torah. The way to take that Matan Torah experience with us through our lives is through holding onto the Torah. And that's why the Aron is at the center of the Mishkan. It highlights for us that the way to connect to Hashem and to bring the Shechina is through the Aron Kodesh, which lies in the center of the entirety of the Mishkan. So that's an overview of, right, the function of the Mishkan and how perhaps the Aron fulfills that purpose. And we're left with the question that we asked in the beginning. We have all of these parshiot that are describing to us the building of the Kalim, the building of the Mishkan, how we place the Kalim in the Mishkan. It seems not so relevant to us nowadays, right? We have all of these parshiot, very fine details that don't seem so relevant to us. And we have a question of, we want to fulfill the Ramban, right? The Ramban says we want to take that inspiration, that lightning, and have it in our everyday lives. And how does the Mishkan teach us to do that? Through taking the Aron Kodesh with the Torah in it and highlighting it, putting it in the most special place. But nowadays, in today's days, we don't have a Mishkan. We don't have a Beit HaMikdash. We don't have a Kodesh HaKadosh with an Aron Kodesh in it. So how are we meant to do this? So that brings us to the second section. How does the Torah, how does the Aron carry us through the generations? Even through the time when we don't have a Mikdash, when we don't have a Mishkan, how can we still, like the Ramban said, continue that Matan Torah experience for us? And I think this is pretty evident in the structure of Jewish life today, right? Let's look at the shul specifically. Which of the kalim do we mimic in a shul? You know, sometimes in a shul, we'll have menorahs, they'll have pictures of the luchot. Actually, in the place that we got married, it was the chuppah right in the center, and they had two menorahs, one on each side. And we got married on a Chanukah, so we're like, wow, tell the florist not to come. We already have decorations, a menorah here, the chuppah in the middle. Beautiful. So yes, we have menorahs in shuls, but the menorahs don't serve a real function in the shuls. It's just kind of to look nice, to look decorative. What's the only one of the kalim that we have nowadays in our shuls? That would be none other than the Aron Kodesh, right? All of our shuls have an Aron. So we're going to see maybe how that Aron Kodesh in our shul can serve as a replacement for the Aron in the Beit HaMikdash. Could serve as a replacement for that Aron Kodesh in the Kodesh HaKadashim. Maybe we can carry it today with us in our shuls. Before we get into that, we're going to see some weird seeming gemaras and midrashim about the Aron that I mentioned at the beginning. And we're going to see how maybe those can tie to the idea of having an Aron Kodesh in our shuls today. So let's look at the gemara in source number 9. The gemara says a very strange statement. It says, but Amar Rabbi Levi. And by the way, often you could look at who's saying a statement and learn something about the person. I actually have this awesome book that's the Art Scroll Introduction to the Talmud. And it gives you a little bit of an explanation of who the different Amoraim and Tanaim were and a little bit their lives. It's very cool. And so apparently Rabbi Levi is known to often say agadic statements. So when you see Amar Rabbi Levi, you know you're going to get something interesting. So here we go. But Amar Rabbi Levi, he says, Davar zeh mesorah biadinu mavotinu. We have a mesorah from our forefathers. What is it? Makom Aron inu min hamita. The place of the Aron Kodesh didn't really fit. The measurements of the Aron didn't fit in the Mikdash. What does that mean? Why did Aron not fit in the Mishkan? It explains for us. Tani Nabi Hakli, we have another brisa that says this. Aron sha'asa Moshe, the Aron that Moshe created, yishlo eser amot l'kol ruach. It says that in the Kodesh HaKadashim, there was an Aron, and the Aron had 10 amot of space in either direction. Viktiv lifnei dvir esrim ama erech, uktiv knaf hakruv ha'achad eser amot, v'knaf hakruv ha'achad eser amot. Aron, gufei ha'hicha ha'vekai. It says, what were the measurements of the Kodesh HaKadashim? That room that the Aron was in was 10 amot by 10 amot. And so, you know, math isn't my thing, but if you have a space that's 10 amot by 10 amot, and you have an object inside of that space, how could there possibly be 10 amot of space on either side of the object, right? The Mishkan, the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 10 by 10. What were the measurements of the Aron Kodesh? It was 1.5 amot by 2.5 amot. So if you have an Aron that's 2.5 amot sitting in the Mishkan, how much space should be on either side? We got 10 minus 2.5, 7.5, right? There should be 7.5 amot in one on vertical, let's say. And in the horizontal direction, if the Aron Kodesh is 1.5 amot and it's 10 amot altogether, how much space should be left over? If my math is right, 8.5 amot, right? But the Gemara tells us, no, there were 10 amot on either side. And therefore, this kind of mystical Gemara is telling us, Makom Aron, Eino min hamida. It didn't really quite fit in its space. It kind of miraculously fit into its place. And the Gemara in source number 10 also, it's a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, and it's also a Medrash in the Shmot Rabbah, a little bit of different Girsaot. The Medrash tells us here that when Shlomo HaMelech wanted to bring the Aron Kodesh into the Beit HaMikdash, into the first Beit HaMikdash, because the same Aron Kodesh the Moshe built from the Mishkan, they also had in the first Beit HaMikdash. But Shlomo had made an Aron Kodesh that was not 2.5 by 1.5, but that was 10 amot by 10 amot. And he wanted to bring that Aron into the Beit HaMikdash. And the Midrash tells us, B'sha'a shehichnis ha'aron l'beit kadshei ha'kadashim, when he wanted to bring the Aron Kodesh, Shlomo Melech, into the Kodesh HaKadashim, asa Aron shel eser amot. He had made an Aron that was 10 amot wide. But kivan shehigil ha'petach Beit HaMikdash, haya ha'petach shel eser amot. When he got to the entrance, the entrance is only 10 amot wide, right? Let's say you have something. We just recently moved into our beautiful apartment here in Washington Heights. And what the most challenging part, perhaps, of moving to the apartment is how exactly can you angle the couch so it could fit in the elevator so the door can close and get up the stairs, right? If you have something, an elevator that's exactly 8 feet tall and a couch that's exactly 8 feet tall, that doesn't really give you wiggle room to get it in. It has to be at least a little bit smaller, especially because they don't just drag the Aron on the floor. The Aron Kodesh has to be carried. So there has to be a little bit of space on the sides for people to carry the Aron, right? So if it was only a 10 amma wide entrance and you want to get in the Aron that's 10 amma wide, what happens? What do you do? If it ain't a sara amma, you chol in lehikanez, betoch esara amma. 10 amma can't fit into 10 amma, said Shlomo HaMelech. But it was very common. He didn't know what to do. The Gemara goes on to say, the hayam is bayish. He was so embarrassed. He didn't know what to do. How was he going to get it in? Again, highlighting that eventually he did get it in. Eventually he squeezed the Aron through and it got to its place in the Beit HaMikdash. But these two, this Medrash, this Gemara are trying to show us is that the Aron couldn't really be contained in its space. It was situated in a place because an object needs to go in a place, but it didn't really fit there. The place that Aron was in couldn't really hold it. It was not a big enough capacity for the Aron. Even though the Aron could literally fit, it kind of burst at the seams. It didn't really go quite into the space in that room. So we're going to get back soon to a little bit about what perhaps this Gemara Medrash are trying to tell us. Let's see one more interesting Gemara about the Aron. Source number 11 talks about what I mentioned in the beginning. When in Sefer Yehoshua, the Jewish people are crossing the Yarden. And the Torah tells us that all of Bnei Israel went through the Yarden, and then the Kohanim were going to go through the Yarden. And the Kohanim were carrying the Aron Kodesh. And the Gemara tells us that when the Kohanim carried the Aron Kodesh, the Aron Kodesh carried them. It's a little bit, you know, the saying that more than the Jews have kept Shabbos, Shabbos has kept the Jews, right? Because we keep Shabbos, then Shabbos like keeps us. It seems like we do a lot of hard things for Shabbos, but really that's what carries the Jews throughout the generations. So what's the Gemara kind of saying here? If we look in the bold part, it says, Nasa Aron et Nosa va'avar. The Aron carried those who were carrying it, and the Kohanim went. They were over the Yarden. And actually, it tells us that the Kohanim were kind of taken right over the water. The Aron kind of lifted them above the water and carried them over the Yarden, because the Aron was Nosei et Nosav. Those who carried the Aron in turn carried them. So two very strange ideas here. The Aron kind of mystically, magically didn't really fit in its space, and we made it fit in a spot. And that when people carried the Aron, and there's a big machlokas whether it was only in this one instance that the Aron carried those who were carrying it, or whether it was a constant thing, that every time the Aron was carried, in fact, it carried those who carry it. All right, and the second thing, the Aron carried those who carried it. It's very mystical, magical kind of things about the Aron. Why is the Gemara inclined to tell us these interesting details, these magical superhero qualities almost of the Aron Kodesh? Why does it do that? So let's now go back to the question that we started with in this section. We said, why is the Aron the only one of the Kelim that we still have nowadays, that we still utilize and have in our shuls nowadays? Let's look at source number 12. We see right at the end of source number 12, the beginning is telling all these different mystical stories about the Amoraim going into shuls and Bavel and hearing noises and hearing interesting things. And then it says a statement about shuls. And it says, a famous line, Va'ahilahen l'mikdash ma'at, that a shul to us is to be a mikdash ma'at. A shul is meant to be a miniature Beit HaMikdash, right? Our Beit Knesset is a Beit Midrash, is a Beit HaMikdash, just that we have in Galus. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak says, the Gemara continues, Elo Batei Knesio Batei Midrasho Shebabavel. The Batei Knesset and the Batei Midrashot that are in Bavel, that are in Chutz La'aretz, that are in Galus, those are really like a miniature Beit HaMikdash. Because a shul is meant to be like a mikdash ma'at for us. And that's a concept that we're very familiar with, right? We talk about this all the time. The shul is supposed to be like a Beit HaMikdash. That's what maybe when the rabbi wants to say, don't talk so much during shul. It's like a Beit HaMikdash, right? All these kind of things that we're supposed to give tremendous kavod to Beit HaKnesset, because it's like a Beit HaMikdash. And what gives a shul that quality of a mikdash, right? We could say that a shul is a beautiful building. We all gather there to daven and in a Beit Midrash to learn together. But what infuses a shul? What infuses a Beit HaKnesset with that mikdash-like status? Right? Something doesn't just get the name mikdash ma'at. There has to be a source of that kedusha. Where does a Kedushas based HaKnesses come from? Right, this happened during COVID a lot. During COVID, everywhere else, the shuls were shut down. We were kicked out of our shuls, and people started davening outside. And then once shuls started to reopen, people still liked davening outside because, right, it's nice to daven outside, hang out. It's nice nature. It's all calmer. It's not in shul. But there was something missing, because davening outside, tefillah, is not the same experiencing tefillah outside, tefillah in any kind of area, in someone's home, in a backyard, to tefillah in a Beit HaKnesset. Because Beit HaKnesset has a special Kedusha. And so back to our question, where does this Kedusha emanate from? What is the source of Kedusha as Beit HaKnesset? If we look in source number 13, in the Sefer HaKone Olamo, written by Mori V'Rabbi, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, in the beginning of his Sefer, the first one, just right, like the Aron Kodesh, the first in the list, he's showing special primacy, special importance to what comes first. And what does he open his Sefer with? Talking about a Beit HaKnesset and what the source of Kedusha Beit HaKnesset is. So let's read it inside. What does Rabbi Leibowitz say the source of Kedusha Beit HaKnesset is? He quotes his Rebbe Rav Shechter, V'kasav Mori Shlita, V'zelashona. Quotes from Rav Shechter's Sefer. He says, V'hayot shebit ha-Knesset, geder k'dushato, Bebechina Mikdash Ma'at, that the Kedusha of a Beit Knesset has an aspect of being like a Mikdash Ma'at, like being of a miniature Beit HaMikdash. Af Beit HaKnesset, Ba'inan Shiyahei Shma, Shama, Aron Im Sefer Torah. And what do we require to have in a shul? We require to have in a Beit HaKnesset an Aron Kodesh with a Sefer Torah. Ukmo Shekasav HaRambam, he says, the Rambam says, Lahedya, Rosh Perak Aleph Mehichos Tefillah, he says, in the beginning of Hichos Tefillah, the Rambam says, what do we build in a shul? Bonim Bo, Heichal Shemanichim Bo, Sefer Torah. We have to build a Heichal, we have to build a space that we're going to put a Sefer Torah in it. And here it is, what Rav Schechter says, Ubeit HaKnesset, She'in Bo Aronim Sefer Torah, a shul that does not have a Aron Kodesh with a Sefer Torah in it, Efshar Shehiye Lo Kedusha Beit HaKnesset. It's impossible that it has Kedusha Beit HaKnesset, because the Kedusha of a shul emanates from the Aron Kodesh. And so we see that even in our lives nowadays, even if we don't have the Mishkan, we still have the ability to have the Aron Kodesh. And maybe in a kind of drash way, what these Gemaras are telling us when they're saying the Makom Aron Eino Min Hamida, it didn't really fit in its spot. Aron Nosei and Nosei, it carries those who carry it. It's trying to say that the Aron, the Torah, can't be contained to a certain space. It's not contained by space. It's not contained by time. Rather, the Aron spans the generations. It's not only in the Mishkan, but it's also in our shuls. It's not only in the days following Matan Torah, but it's also today. It kind of carries us throughout the generations. And this is something that Rav Soloveitchik liked to say. He said, if I can add a 14th Ani Ma'amin to the 13th Ani Ma'amin, I would say to add Vayehi bin Soa Aron. What does that mean? That Rav Soloveitchik was in Europe and he looked at America and saw nothing's going on in America. Nothing's doing. There's no Torah. There's no infrastructure. There's no religious life. It seems completely desolate. But then Rav Soloveitchik came to America and he built this almost this empire, this real infrastructure and building in yeshivas and Limud HaTorah, huge communities. All of Limud HaTorah in North America is now flourishing, right? And so what did Rav Soloveitchik say? The secret is behind that. He said, Vayehi bin Soa Aron. Wherever the Aron travels, wherever the Torah travels, it will flourish. Wherever we go, the Torah flourishes. The Aron, all these midrashim about the Aron are saying that the Torah is not contained to a space. Wherever we take the Aron, it'll come with us. It comes with us throughout the generations. And an interesting point the Gemara makes is the Gemara also says that each of the Kalim had these kind of loops with poles, with a badim that went through them. And they were used for carrying the Kalim when they would travel in the Midbar. And uniquely by the Aron Kodesh, the Gemara tells us, and the Torah actually tells us this, that the badim, those poles, were not to be moved from the Aron. Meaning all of the other Kalim had holes, and when they would travel, they would put the poles through those holes, and they would carry them. When they got to their destination, they would take out the poles and put them on the side. But the Aron Kodesh, the poles, the badim, always stayed in it. They would travel, and they would keep the poles there. Why? So showing us almost that the Aron Kodesh is portable. It's always ready to go. Vayehi bin Soa Aron. The Torah is on the move with us. It takes us throughout the generations. It takes us throughout time. And maybe what this is highlighting for us is that the purpose of the Mishkan, the Asuli Mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham, we can accomplish nowadays also through having a shul, through having a Beit Knesset with an Aron Kodesh, and through having the Torah, being able to learn the Torah and take that with us and have the Torah almost carry us through the generations. Like the Gemara says, the Aron was Nosei et Nosa, carries those who carry it. So as we carry the Torah throughout the generations, the Torah carries us throughout the generations. So now that we've seen kind of the function of the Mishkan as a whole and its purpose, and how the Aron fulfills that purpose of continuing that Matan Torah experience with us, and we've seen how even when we don't have the Mishkan nowadays, how we can continue that Matan Torah experience through the Aron Kodesh in our shuls, through Limud HaTorah, I want to take a closer look at the construction of the Aron Kodesh, at kind of the divine blueprints of the Aron Kodesh. And the Gemara tells us that there are a number of lessons we could learn about Limud HaTorah for our lives today. A few things we can learn about how we can go about learning Torah and what the experience of Talmud Torah is meant to be like by looking at details and the construction of the Aron. So let's take a look. The psukim tell us about the Mishkan, about specifically about the Aron Kodesh. Two details. There are a few details, but we're gonna focus on two details. One detail is that there was a little crown that went around the Mishkan. Actually, what I have here, a little bit of show and tell time, is an awesome book I once got from the Star himself, which is going on right now in YU, all about the Mishkan. It's this beautiful grand book, and it has pictures of everything in the Mishkan. And it shows us a beautiful picture here, a little show and tell time, of a crown that was built around the border of the Aron Kodesh. Kind of to show some kind of royalty, a little show and tell time. People see, right? Here's a little crown. It's called the Zer that was built around the Aron Kodesh. And the Gemara tells us a little bit about this crown. What's behind this crown? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yochanan, Shlosha Zeirim, there were three crowns built upon Kalim in the Mishkan. The three Kalim were Shel Mizbeach, Shel Aron, Shel Shulchan. The Mizbeach had a crown, the Aron Kodesh had a crown, and the Shulchan had a crown. Some little gold lining that went around it, kind of to beautify it a little bit. And what do these crowns symbolize? The Gemara tells us three different things. Shel Mizbeach, Zacha Aron v'Natzlo. The crown of Mizbeach, Aron took it. Shel Shulchan, Zacha David v'Natzlo. The crown on the Shulchan, David HaMelech took it. Now, what are those two things? Why did Aron take the Mizbeach? Because Aaron's family represents Kahuna, and the Kohanim get to eat the korbanot that are offered in the Mizbeach. So it's as if Aaron took the crown from the Mizbeach. And on the Shulchan represents wealth, prosperity, sustenance, and that's something that represents Malchus, that kings have all of these things. So David HaMelech, the Davidic dynasty, as if took the crown of the Shulchan. The crown of the Mizbeach was taken. The crown of the Shulchan was taken. But Shel Aron, the crown that's on top of the Aron Kodesh, like we saw in the book, Adayin Munachu, that crown is still there. It's waiting for us. And Kol HaRotze Likach, Yavo V'Yikach. Anyone who wants to take that crown, it's up for grabs. Anyone can come and take it. And Shema Tomar Pachotu, the Gemara says, lest you say it's less, because it's still open. It's still there for the taken. Tamud Lomar, Bi Malachim Mimlochu, that the kings, even the greatest kings, They need to heed to the words of the Torah in order to be successful. And that's just the Torah is Ola al Kulana. The Torah is the highest crown and it's still over there for the taking. Anyone can take the Torah. And this relates back to one other thing that we mentioned earlier in this year. Why by the Aron does it say Vasu in plural? The Medrash tells us in source number 17. Let's look in the bold part, or we'll start in the beginning. Zavaracher v'asu Aron, asu in plural. Why? Let's get to the bold. It's to tell us yavo hakol v'yasku ba'aron. Everybody should come and work on building the Aron Kodesh. Why? Kidei sheyizku kulam haTorah, because that's the way that all of us will be able to be zocha to limud haTorah. These gemaras and this medrash are telling us that the crown of Torah is there for the taking. The Aron is there, and it's not just Moshe. It's Vasu. It's everybody has to be involved in the Torah because it's there for us. And what's the lesson that this is teaching us about Torah? Is that Torah is there for us. We just have to go and take it, right? It's as if on a golden platter for us, and it's just waiting there. The Gemara says, Adayin Munachu. It's resting there. Anyone who wants it has to come and take it. We have to take that step to take it, right? That's what everyone is doing tonight on this year. Everyone could just be lounging on a Thursday night and we're saying, what are we going to do? The Torah's there. Torah in Motion's having a share at 8:30. I'm going to get on the Zoom. I'm going to get up there and I'm going to take it. And that's what this crown is telling us. Torah is there, but we have to get up and do something about it. We have to get up and open that sefer. We have to get up and learn something. And maybe this could be explained even further by seeing what the two other crowns in the Mishkan. Right? What were the two other crowns in the Mishkan? It was the Mizbeach, which represents Kahuna, and it was the Shulchan, which represents Malchus. And we look in Pirkei Avot, in source number 16, it says, Gedola Torah yoter min Kahuna u min Malchus. Torah is even greater than Kahuna. It's even greater than Malchus. Now, why the comparison to Kahuna and Malchus? Perhaps because Kahuna and Malchus are both things that are generational. They're handed down to the next generation. Your father is the king. You're next in line to be the king. Your father is a Kohen. You are a Kohen. There are things that are just handed down to you. It's a Yerusha. It's something that you automatically inherit. It's a passage. It's a way of life that you get from the generation in front of you. But what is Torah? Pirkei Avot tells us in source number 18, the Hatzkin Atzmecha Lomo Torah, we have to make sure that we set times to learn Torah because She'ina Yerushalach. The Torah is not a Yerusha to us. The Torah does not get passed down to us like the Kahuna or like the Malchus. It's not something we could just sit there and Torah will come to us. Rather, it's a crown that's waiting there, but we have to go and get it. And just to address the last line in the Gemara, where the Gemara says, Shema Yomar Pachos Hu. Maybe you would say, maybe it's a little bit lesser, meaning it's so accessible to us. When something is so accessible to us, sometimes we don't view it with such prestige. Just for example, this summer I'm working at Camp Moshe Va'abair. And I shouldn't have said which camp, but if anyone knows anyone, we'll take people. We're looking for division heads. And the way that we phrase it when we kind of go to college students, and we try to pitch it to them, we don't say like, we really need division heads. We're desperate for them. There's a ton of positions open. We say, there's a few spots open. It's very exclusive and competitive. We need a few division heads. So when something's so accessible, when it's so easy to get, people don't really think it's so interesting. Only when something's a little bit removed, something's a little bit harder to get, that's when we want to go for it. When something's a little more exclusive, that's when we want it. So if the Torah is just lying there and it's just there for the taking, we might be inclined to think it's not really so important. But the Gemara is reminding us, even though it's there, you got to run for it. You got to seize the moment. You got to take the Torah because that's how we're going to grow. That it's not through inheritance. It's not a Yerusha. But rather, it's ourselves getting up there and taking the Torah ourselves. And there's a really interesting Gemara in source number 19, the Gemara in the end of Masechet Menachot. The Amoraim debate, how can we fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? How can we best fulfill the commandment of V'higeita Bam Yomam V'layla? You say in Ma'ariv, right, every night, V'higeita Bam Yomam V'layla, that we're supposed to learn Torah day and night. And the Torah tells us, V'lo Yamush Sefer HaTorah Hazeh Mipicha. The Torah should not leave our mouths. So how can we fulfill this commandment? And let's see. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai tells us, he says, even if you were only to learn Kriyat Shema, you're just to say Kriyat Shema once in the morning and once at night, that would fulfill your chiyuv of Talmud Torah. We see the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, in the second line in source number 19, Afilu lo kara adam ela Kriyat Shema shachris v'arvis. If one only all he did was say Shema in the morning, Shema at night, Kiyem lo yamush, you would be fulfilling the commandment of learning Torah. But then Rav Shlomo Bar Yochai says, but v'davar zeh asur lo omro b'fnei am haaretz. It's asur to tell am haaretz this. People who are uneducated, you can't tell them the secret that they can fulfill Torah learning through only Kriyat Shema night and day. But Rava disagrees. Rava says, Mitzvah l'omro b'fnei amaretz. It's actually a mitzvah to tell them this. We're going to focus on Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai. Why does he say it's usher to tell amei haaretz you can fulfill the commandment to learn Torah by just saying Kriyat Shema in the morning, Kriyat Shema at night? He says it's because it's setting the bar too low. If people think that I could just be Yotzei by just saying Kriyat Shema in the morning, Kriyat Shema at night, who's going to pick up a Gemara and do Daf Yomi? Who's going to do Shnayim Mikra when all you could do is just for, 2 minutes rather than 20 minutes, rather than 2 hours, you could fulfill Torah, lo yamush, but just Kriyat Shema in the morning and the night. And what this is telling us, Rabbi Shlomo Bar Yochai is telling us, we just set our goals high. We can't just say, whatever Torah I happen to hear, the Torah I get as a Yerusha, that's good enough for me. He's saying, we have to get up, we have to grab that crown of Torah. We have to reach higher, higher than just Kriyat Shema in the morning and night, higher than just a simple psukim here and there. We have to really take on that Limud HaTorah. And maybe perhaps, this is just something that I thought of, is the Gemara tells us, that what's one of the things that was included in the Aron? It's kind of like a treasure chest of lots of different things. The Aron, the Lucha were in the Aron, the Gemara tells us, the broken Lucha were in the Aron, Aron staff. And it tells us also the man was in the Aron. Why the man? In a Parsha Shir a few weeks ago, Rabbi Arya Leibowitz said that what the man represents is a person's mindset, right? What was the man? The man was a little crispy, honey-covered piece of food that could taste like anything in the world that you want. It's open to your imagination. And he said, you could tell people's attitudes by what they chose the man to be, right? If you just choose the man to be a little, a little snack, a little wafer with a little bit of honey on it, you don't have such big goals. But if you want, it to be a steak, fancy dinner, it could taste like that. It's all up to you. It's all up to what you make of it. So maybe a reason that the man is inside of the Aron Kodesh is to show us that same lesson. Torah is like the man. It's malleable. It's what we make of it. Torah could be a little. It could just be Kriyat Shema Shachar Sarvis. But if we set our goals big, if we say, I imagine I want the Torah to be like this. I want the man to taste like this. That's what Torah can be for us. It's all up to us. So this is the first thing that the Aron is showing us by its construction. You see, the Aron has that zer on it. It has that crown. And it's teaching us that the crown of Torah is there. And what we have to do is just step up and take it. Because Torah isn't just handed to us on a silver platter. It's not like Kuhuna and Malchus. It's something we have to step up, set the bar high, like the man, like not just Kriyat Shema, and do it ourselves. So that's number one, the number one feature of the Aron Kodesh. And to finish off, let's look at the second feature of the Aron Kodesh. Another feature of the Aron Kodesh is that the Pasuk says it was made of wood, but it was covered both on the inside and the outside in gold. And the Gemara tells us in Yoma Ayin Bet Amud Bet. The Gemara in Yoma on Daf Ayin Bet has a lot of statements about the Aron Kodesh, all these interesting statements. And one of them is, Mibayit Mechutz Tzitzapenu, you should cover the Aron, Mibayit Mechutz, the inside and the outside both with gold. Amar Rava, Kol Tamid Chacham, She'ino Tocho Kabaro, Eino Tamid Chacham. Any Tamid Chacham who isn't the same on the inside as he is on the outside, isn't a Talmud Chacham. Because the Torah is supposed to transform us as people. It's supposed to make us into better Avdei Hashem, to be Yirei Shemayim, to be good people. And so if somebody learns and does all these things on the outside, but he's not Tocho Kabaro, his inside doesn't reflect that Torah that he's learning, he's not a Talmud Chacham. And that's what the Aron is showing us. The Aron is Atzei Shitim it's made of. It's made of wood. And we can look into verse number 21. In an article on VBM, they pointed this out, saying that what is the Atzei Shitim? What does that wood represent? Wood represents man. Because the Pasuk tells us in Devarim Parshat Shoftim, in the bold part in source number 21, Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh, that man is akin to a tree. And therefore, the Gemara is saying that a person is like the Atzei Shitim. A person is that block of wood in the Aron. And what are we meant to do? Torah is meant to cover us in gold on the inside and the outside. A person is meant to learn Torah in order to refine his character, both internally and externally. So we are the wood and we're covered in gold like the Aron. But it's so crucial that we're covered in gold, not only on the outside, not only to the world, but also on the inside. But just something to remember that's important here is it's not to say that we have to come in and we have to be people who are so steady and so whole on the inside already. We don't have to come in already being gold on the inside. That's not a prerequisite to learning Torah. It's that we have to learn Torah, and Torah is metaheras. Torah makes us into better people. And so through learning Torah, through us just being that wood and learning Torah, we're going to gain that gold covering. We're going to gain that preciousness. We're going to gain that brightness. And we just have to make sure in that process of learning Torah that it's not only external, but it's internal as well. And that when we learn Torah, we can reflect it to the world. We can become better people. We can be an Or L'Goyim. The Torah is meant to transform us both inside and out. And so when we look at the Aron, we take a step back and let's see what we did tonight, right? We saw the function, the purpose of the Aron as a whole. We saw Rashi and the Ramban, and we followed through the Ramban's approach, that the Mishkan is meant to be a continuation of Matan Torah, to be a continuation of Ma'amad Har Sinai, to bring Hashem Shechina into our everyday lives. And we saw all the parallels between the Aron Kodesh and the Mishkan as a whole, to show that the Aron is at the center of the Mishkan. The Aron is the essence of the Mishkan, because the Torah is what brings us close to Hashem. The Torah is what continues that Matan Torah experience throughout the generations. And that even in the times when we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, we still have the Torah that carries us. The Torah carries us. It's no say at no sab. It's not confined to the space of the Mishkan because it's in omin amida. It kind of comes out everywhere. The Torah doesn't even contain to a specific space. And we learn these two nice lessons from looking at how the construction, how the blueprints of the Aron, Hashem tells us how to make the Aron through the crown that we're supposed to get up there. We're supposed to take the Torah, and through being gold, both on the inside and the outside. Mibayit Mechutz. To show us The Torah is meant to transform us, to make us good people, both on the inside and on the outside. But just something to remember, to end off, that even though we could take the Torah with us through the generations, even though we have the Aron Kodesh and we have the Torah and we could learn it, and that's the way we connect to Hashem today, just as a caveat to remember that this isn't the end-all be-all. That even though we have it today, we have the Torah, we have an Aron in our shuls, and that's amazing, there's still more to strive for, right? What does the Gemara tell us? The Gemara tells us when we get to Shemayim, we're going to be asked 6 questions. And one of the questions the Gemara says we're going to be asked is, Tzipita LeYeshua, did you look forward to the redemption? Did you believe that Mashiach was going to come and the Beit HaMikdash was going to be rebuilt in its glory? That's one of the questions we're going to answer to. And something we say at the end of Shmona Esrei every day, we say Yehi Ratzon to show that we're being Tzipita LeYeshua. We're ending off Shmona Esrei saying, Hashem, Yehi Ratzon Mefanecha Hashem Elokeinu, if you look in source number 22, Hashem, you should build the Beit HaMikdash. All these parshut of the Mishkan that we're reading through, they seem long, they seem a little boring. We're saying, no, Hashem, we want it back. Yehi ratzon that you should rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. But then there's an interesting line that gets thrown in there that doesn't seem to have to do with the Beit HaMikdash. The line is, v'tein chalkinu b'toratecha. And Hashem, give us our chilek in Torah. What does our chilek in Torah have to do with the building of the Beit HaMikdash? Why, when we say Yehi Ratzon, asking Hashem to rebuild the temple in its glory, do we say, Hashem, please give us our place in Torah. Give us our chilek in Torah. Perhaps the answer is because even though we have Torah nowadays, we can learn Torah. We could be good people inside and out. We can grab the Torah. We could set the bar high. Even though we are able to learn Torah nowadays, ain't no domet when we're going to have the Beit HaMikdash. When we have the Beit HaMikdash, our Limud HaTorah is going to be so much greater. Our connection to Hashem is going to be so much greater. So going now into Shabbos, into Parshat Truma, into all of the Parshiot HaMishkan, we could take with us the idea that Torah is in place of the Mishkan nowadays. How do we fulfill the statement in the beginning that we started with the Pasuk of Asuli Mikdash V'Shachati B'Tocham is through the Torah. But to always look forward to the time we're going to have the Beit HaMikdash. Because then, v'tein chalkinu b'toratecha, then our Torah is going to be so much greater. And in order to get there, in order to go on that journey towards being nowadays bereft of the Mishkan, bereft of the Mikdash, and working towards those days of the Geula where the Beit HaMikdash will come, we can take the Torah with us. And in that way, Hashem's presence, that Matan Torah experience, we can experience today. In that when we go through our lives, we learn Torah, and thereby we can fulfill the commandment of the Mishkan of Va'asuli Mikdash V'Shachanti B'Tocham. We take the Torah with us, and in that way, Hashem's presence will dwell among us. Everyone should have a wonderful Parshat Truma. Enjoy all of the Parshiyot of the Mishkan, and be zochet to feeling Hashem's presence with us in our lives. Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. And I love your enthusiasm.
Thank you, Avigal Gelman.
Okay. Yashar Koach. And I don't know, I see your grandfather online. I'm not sure who else is from your family, but welcome and very nice. Okay. Next week, Ruth Shane, who's a regular at Torah Motion, will be giving the Parsha Shir. Tetzaveh, continuing on the theme of, you know, the 4 Parshiot of the Mishkan. That will be next Thursday night. Tomorrow morning, of course, my regular Shir on the Siddur at 9:30. As I mentioned at the beginning, Sunday, of course, Rabbi Liebtag always starts. Of course, his topic now, you might be interested to know, he's giving a whole series on basically Emut Amu Muchar B'Torah. He's going through all the places in the Torah where Rashi and the Ramban argue what happened in order. So you were alluding that to, of course, this evening at the beginning.
Wedding the Appetite for Rabbi Liebtag.
Yeah, there you go. And following his shir, as I mentioned, Rabbi Amnon Bazak, also in Alon Shvut, back-to-back in Alon Shvut, who's a Rebbe in the Yeshiva Har Etzion, will be giving shir Bivrit on Megillat Esther. And then we have our regular shir during the week. And like I mentioned, Wednesday, Malka Simkowitz will be giving a special shir on Purim-related ideas. So we'll send out an email about that soon. And then, okay, we'll look forward to learning with you. Everybody, invite a friend. Shabbat Shalom. We hope to see you soon. And Laila Tov, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you, Liora. And Mazel Tov again.
Thank you.
Okay, very good.
Good Shabbos all.
Liora is like the shining menorah.
Oh, thank you.
Shabbos, thank you. It's Shabbos, thank you very much. I really
that was great.
Enjoyed it.
It was
amazing.
Thank you.
Really got a lot out of it.
I'm so glad.
Thank you.
Beautiful sequence and structure. It was great.
Shepping Nakas. We're shepping Nakas right now.
Okay. Very good, Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.